Welcome to The Clinic Cast, a conversational podcast dedicated to telling the stories of allied health business owners. And today we're joined by Ryan Hendrick, the founder of Dynamic Tape. Ryan shares his journey from being a physiotherapist all the way up to being the head of a company that distributes products all over the world. Ryan shares some very key moments along his journey that any clinician who's interested in product development should hear. Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. I think, the whole idea of this podcast is to chat about allied health business as a whole. It's not necessarily just like business owners, but in terms of your classic clinic. But I think most physios at some point in their career are like, oh, that's a cool idea of a product. I'd love to I reckon I could commercialize that or I wonder if they could invent this. So I think that exploring your history, because if I'm not mistaken, there are two things that you've developed. There's a Posture Pals and the Dynamic Tape. And you're also on the New Inventors as well, which was a show I used to love back in the day. I used to watch it with my parents. Right. So yeah. I think the best place to start, Ryan, would be you're a physio first. So I assumed, the uni happened and you started working before you started these ventures. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did my bachelor's degree at the University of Queensland, and I worked for a couple of years on the Gold Coast as a new graduate doing the rotations, and I worked through intensive care for a while, quite a while in the end, and all the other sort of areas throughout the hospital and so on, and then a little bit in private practice, a little bit at Tweed Hospital actually before I moved over to the UK. And so I moved over there, a bunch of my friends and colleagues sort of from, the year above, the year below, my year, et cetera, all over there at the time. So, so we moved over there, and it's actually funny, I was sort of a bit disillusioned with physio, after doing that, moving over there, and, I was sort of watching these students come through and sort of seeing them all get the hot pack and the ultrasound, and that was sort of the supervision that they were getting through the hospitals, or certainly where I was. I'm not tarring everybody with the same brush, but that was sort of what I was seeing. And I actually nearly gave it away. I was actually in the process of my cousin was, worked in the stock market over there, and he said, I can get you a job with our firm. You have a medical-based degree. We need a certain number of people, with this sort of training, first aid and all this sort of stuff, and so you won't start on the completely bottom rung and that sort of thing. And I was just in the process of doing that, which was a bit of a departure, because I really loved the idea of physio and things, but I just thought we're just sort of really entertaining the mind while the body heals itself. We're not really doing a whole lot. And then it was quite fortuitous, I was invited out for dinner with friends who I'd worked with back on the Gold Coast who were English physios, and a couple of the physios there worked with the professional cricket in England at Sussex. And they said, hey, look, you should chat to James Davis at Essex. He's looking for a physio. He'd like an Australian. He'd done his postgrad, studies out in Perth. And so I met up with James one day after a match at Lord's, and we had a couple of drinks over the road, and it just resonated. What he was saying was what I, thought I should be doing and wanted to be doing. And so, I started working with James, and it was just a whole different profession. It was a very steep learning curve, and I was very fortunate to have him, as a mentor, if you like. And I remember when I first started, he had to go away about 3 or 4 weeks later, and I was staying at his house with him when I first moved in, started working with him. And he was coming out to Australia for the Manip Physio Association conference, and then to the US, I think, for one of the others, IFOMP or something. And so I basically had a few weeks with him first, and then about 6 weeks where he was away, and I was basically running the whole show, the clinic and the cricketers at Essex where we were at the time. And it was just 12, 13-hour days and coming back. And he had a fantastic library of back in those days, videos, VHS sort of videos of various, approaches and people and great books and textbooks. So I was basically coming back every night trying to decipher what his notes had been all about during the day when I'd taken over from his patient or taken over his patient. So trying to figure out what his notes were talking about. But I tell you, in that sort of 6 weeks, I learned a lot. And then it was great because he could then direct me to, you know, ongoing education that he'd, you know, been to. He had a very good, awareness of what was worth going to, what wasn't, and so on. And I mean, even now he still brings over Peter O'Sullivan, you know, he hosts him over in the UK and works with Pete still and that sort of thing. So, I was very lucky. So that was sort of where I was, sort of my, I guess, the start to the journey. And then doing that, you know, we were always asking those questions, what's going on, why. It wasn't just sort of a find the sore spot and push on it and wave some magic on it. It was sort of really trying to answer questions. And so I worked with James for a few years at the Essex County Cricket Club, as I say, and we had a private practice there as well that James had built up to be very successful and well beyond what he could do by himself. So it was great. We did a lot with the pain centre from Cambridge University and Addenbrooke Hospital. We used to get quite a lot of their people. So, again, it was really interesting because you're getting these people who've, you know, had lots of interventions, seen lots of people, had multiple surgeries potentially, have had problems for a long time. And so you sort of, you know, you get to work out fairly quickly. You need to have a very systematic approach to these things and you know, you sort of know if they're getting better. You know, it's not just the effect of time because they've had this for so long, and that, you know, it really does, I think, help you develop your clinical reasoning and that sort of thing, and also challenges you. And I think that's probably the big thing, is the ones that, you know, the people that you can't help or aren't getting where you like are the ones who really, you know, drive you to go back, you know, share, you know, notes with colleagues or get somebody else to have a look at them or put your head back in the books or whatever it is. And, you know, we're fortunate these days that there's a lot more access to good information. You know, we used to have the hard copies of the journals that we used to get, you know, Pain and JAMA and, you know, British Journal of Sports Medicine and Manual Therapy and the ones we used to get each month, but or each quarter or whatever it was. But, yeah, now you've got it all at your fingertips. It's amazing.
I can't believe that. I never even thought about that. But, yeah, you had hard copy journals.
I think to myself
that's insane. Are they expensive? Did you just buy one a year? Is it like a subscription where they send out a monthly update?
No, they were subscriptions. Yeah, they were subscriptions, and some were monthly, some were quarterly, you know, and you would get them coming out. And and you know, I think it in a sense, I think it was a good thing in that it probably maintained the quality of the research that was presented in the journals, because they were, you know, you had to pay for them. They had obviously a lot more costs involved with putting them together. They were generally not for profit. In, you know, most cases, they were the associations and so on who were doing it. And so I think it probably maintained it. Now there's a big emphasis on publication. There's a lot of, you know, journals of various quality and you know, yeah, won't go down that path, but, you know, you can argue there's a lot of things that you're probably better off spending your time doing something else than reading. Let's just say that.
Yeah, sort of the old flashy title and the lack of substance, I think, is a big deal.
Yeah.
Something I've learned as well during this PhD that I've been doing is just how much stuff comes out that you have to read a couple of times to actually go, no, you know what, this is actually terrible.
Yeah, exactly. And look, and I think that's probably the negative of things being at your fingertips and people being, you know, you've only got a few seconds, you know, to capture people's, you know, attention, and they tend to read the abstract and maybe a conclusion. And you know, that's probably one of the issues that we've found actually with Dynamic Tape, is that anybody can get hold of your product and do research on it and not be aligned at all with what, you know, it was developed for and what we've been trying to do with it and our approach and so on. But also, you know, you can just look at the methodology and go, well, that was never going to show anything. But because there's a product involved, people go, oh, it must be the product didn't do anything, you know, when it's like, you know, we had one study, you know, I don't want to criticise people, but there was one study where, you know, basically they were taping people from the greater trochanter down to the lateral malleolus and then looking at dynamic balance things. They're like, well, what's the connection between it? Like, what is, you know, what's the mechanism by which you think that is going to work? You know, I sort of say to people, you know, if you can't answer a few simple questions before you put tape on, you're hoping, not helping. You know, it's sort of like you're just hoping there's some connection there. It's like if you can't say what the deficit is, like, you know, not the diagnosis, but what is the deficit that you're trying to address by introducing this force with a tape? You know, can you introduce this genuine force? You know, what's the relationship between that deficit and whatever the condition is? Is it just a red herring, or is there actually a relationship? You know, how are you going to then determine that you've got a genuine force in, you know, by what mechanism is it going to have its effect? And then if you did get a genuine force in, how are you going to assess whether it had an impact on whatever it was you were looking at in the first place? So, you know, often people sort of tape movements, or they tape on a diagnosis, or they just tape on tradition. We always do this, and it's a cut and paste sort of thing. It's like, you know, you only get mediocre outcomes if you're doing it that way. You need to be going, well, look, you know, there's a clear deficit there. You know, they've got poor inner range knee extension control because their quads are weak. I can come in and I can generate a force with the tape that's going to resist them collapsing into flexion. And then, you know, then you may have some hope of that having a knock-on effect to things. But, you know, you need to know what it is you're trying to do in the first place.
That's really interesting how I've never even thought of it from the product's point of view of research as well, because I assume people can just use your product in research. Do they have to actually get approval? Because then they could just like, because no. You could then from like, this is my dark mind going, but if you were a competitor, you could just set up like 10 really average studies, get them published in a really average journal or a low quality journal, or we just put them on ResearchGate and completely rail a product like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, and I think it probably works the other way as well. You know, obviously pharmaceuticals have a bad rep in that regard, where, you know, there's potential bias the other way. We try to stay clear of the research in terms of not conducting it ourselves, because we don't want to be seen to be biased, even though I think I'm more critical and of it than anybody, because I want to know what's going on. I want to know the best way to do things. I want to know what, you know, I want to dissect out the mechanisms of what it is and isn't doing, you know, when we do stuff. But yeah, you know, people will do, people can get hold of it and they can do research. And as I say, it may not be aligned, or it may not be, you know.
I'd really like to go back to when this idea started. So you're a practicing physio, you're obviously really busy with, I guess, the cricket and the private practice taking off that you're working with.
Yeah.
When did this idea pop into your head, and were there any other inspirations, I guess, at that time that you were learning from?
Yeah, I think the idea sort of twigged back then. And, you know, when I was actually working, I worked with Essex and James for a couple of years. I went away, I came back to Australia, did my master's. Then I was working on the tennis circuit with Greg Rozetsky, who you might be too young to remember, but Greg was he'd been number four in the world, US Open finalist, good player. He'd sort of dropped down quite a bit due to injury, and he asked me to come along with him. So I started travelling with Greg on the circuit and with the British Davis Cup team and that sort of thing. And again, it was one of those things where we're looking at, you know, these guys are always pushing that threshold, and if they're here, they're breaking down. If they're here, they're okay. And it was, can we bridge that sort of loading gap, you know, and how do we do that? The cricket was the same, a lot of overuse, overload type of issues. Tennis was the same. And so it was really sort of twigging there. And I taped quite a lot. And I remember actually probably the real impetus that got it going was the posture pals. And I had these few years of working and traveling quite a lot. And I said, okay, we need to sort of slow down a little bit. I've been working back on the Gold Coast with Tim Brown and Louise Eddy at Mermaid Sports Medicine. It was a great practice, had, you know, some fantastic people come through there. So I learned a lot from those guys as well, you know, some of the Australian swimmers and this sort of stuff. And then we'd just got married not too long earlier, and we moved to Norfolk Island. We got this opportunity to work on Norfolk Island. My four times great-grandfather had been a convict on Norfolk Island, so this was interesting. So we went to Norfolk, and I had Brad Beer. I don't know if you know Brad, who does a great podcast as well, and obviously is very big into his bone stress injuries and so on, having been a good triathlete himself. And I treated Brad actually in that clinic at Mermaid when he was a student, physio student. And so he came and did a placement with me out on Norfolk. And Brad's a go-getter, you know, especially back in those days, young and enthusiastic and all these things. And we taped up a patient sort of for their posture with your fix them all and your rigid tape and whatever else, and you know, had a nice outcome. And I sort of said to him, you know, I've got this idea in my head, because, you know, the issue with that is that you can't sit here all day. You're not meant to sit, you know, in that upright position all day. But with those rigid tapes, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't move anywhere and whatever. So great when you sort of needed it, but people would fatigue and get a bit sore and whatnot and couldn't do their sport or whatever else. And so I sort of had this idea with the posture powers of what I wanted to do to actually be a strong reminder and help people regularly change position, you know, not hold them in one position, let them flex, let them do whatever they needed to do, but also assist them so they didn't fatigue as quickly and so on. And I don't know if Brad remembers this, but he sort of looked at me and he said, you know, if you don't do it, I will. Is what he sort of
okay.
I better do something. And that was sort of when we started. So I got all these foams and things sent to me from all over the place, and glue, different adhesives, and we were laminating them all together. And eventually we came up with the first sort of iteration of the posture powers, which is what we ended up on the new inventors on the ABC with. And that was sort of, you know, to see, you know, is there really a market with this? Is it worth doing it, you know? And we've been using them in our clinic, and a couple of others have been using them, sort of testing them out. And we found after the new inventors, we got a flood of orders. You know, it was quite interesting because we'd been giving, I guess, or using them on people who we really thought they were indicated for, and giving really clear instructions of, you know, they were supposed to do with them. You know, you're not supposed to hang off it, but when you feel it stretching, that's your prompt to straighten up and all these sorts of things, so they're regularly moving and so on. So then once we sort of sold this to a whole bunch of people and users and whatever else, and we sort of found there was a few issues because the foam, it didn't really breathe very well. So in the hot weather, it could get a bit uncomfortable, or people would just keep moving through it and would start shearing the glue off, and they get left with strips of glue on their back and no foam and this sort of thing. And that's what then evolved into the search for something better, which resulted in the fabric that we developed, which went on to become the tape. So that was sort of the evolution of it. So once we looked over hundreds more foams and things, and we couldn't get things that had the recoil, or they just deformed, or they tore, or just couldn't do what we wanted to do. And then we thought, well, we're going to need to go to a fabric type of thing. And, you know, there was nothing really around that did what we wanted to do. And so ultimately we basically developed the original dynamic tape fabric. So, yeah. And we've been sort of trying, I guess, going back to your earlier question of where the thought was, I mean, we were already trying this stuff. We were taping, you know, TheraBand to people to try and, you know, create that deceleration or that change of movement. Or, you know, I remember cutting up inner tubes from bicycle tires and taping those to people, you know, like just to try to get that effect. But, you know, you can't sort of send your athlete back onto the center court at Wimbledon with a bicycle tube stuck to them, you know, so.
Unless it works dramatically, and then you're an absolute genius.
Well, that's right. Yeah, then maybe you do. So, but yeah. So that was sort of the evolution of it.
So what does that look like in terms of the practicalities of finding different fabrics and maybe that time frame? So I think that'd be really interesting to explore. So you're, I assume you're searching and you're talking to manufacturers, giving specifications. Like, yeah. What does that process look like? Because even if I thought about it, I'm like, I wouldn't even know where to start trying to find the right glue or the right recoil fabric. Yeah. How did that journey sort of go?
Yeah, and it's difficult. It's probably a bit easier now, again, because things have opened up a lot more with the internet. I mean, we had the internet. Now I'm going back to I think it was probably 2006, I think, when we started, it would have been, or end of 2005, early 2006, when we started working on the original posture pals to get the foam and so on. And so, yeah, we look, I went initially, I went through a whole lot of suppliers in Australia and so on, and nobody actually really made it in Australia. Even big companies like 3M, who have lots of adhesives, or those sorts of guys, it was all manufactured either in Europe, US, or Asia. So nothing was sort of actually made in Australia. And actually, we did end up bringing in, at one point early on, we were bringing in bulk rolls of fabric, and then already with the adhesive laminated onto it. So it had the fabric, the adhesive, and the backing paper all on it. And we just were getting one process done in Australia, which was cutting it down and putting it onto a single core, you know, single roll. Nothing else. And that single process was more expensive than the whole thing, start to finish, packaged everything from South Korea, where we were at the time, simply because they had the volume. You know, they were doing a lot of work with textiles and adhesives and so on. So it was just, we would have had to, you know, you couldn't do it all in Australia, unfortunately. And if you did, you or even with the bits you could do, you're probably still charging $100 for a roll of tape,
yeah,
you know, back then. So that was a frustration, I think, with it. So time frames. I mean, I think end of 2005, 2006, we started working on the posture pals. We were on New Inventors in 2008. I think it was April or something like that, 2008. So there's a couple of years. We probably had it in the clinics for about 12 months by that stage. And then after that, it was the end of, well, I think the APA conference in October 2010 was the first sort of marketing type of thing that we did for the dynamic tape as a roll in the roll form once we created that. So that's 15 years ago now. So it's and I think the Powerband version that we've only recently released, which is sort of more equivalent to almost two layers of the original tape, so higher recoil, higher resistance, really, you know, rather than having, like you say, with the Eco, the black one, rather than having to put two layers together, you know, you can just do it in one. The Eco is still different in that it's got that higher resistance with less recoil, so more for your positioning and your resistance-based stuff, like your ankles and things like that. But probably the Powerband, if I'm honest, is probably closer to the tape I wanted to create at the start, you know, than now. So, another 13 years to get to that one, you know, and the Eco, because that's made out of recycled plastic bottles, which was really, we're really, you know, keen to do that. I'd like to have them all out of recycled stuff, but getting the properties right is difficult. But that was about 5 or 6 years in the making as well to get right, just with the testing, sampling, back and forth, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is something that, like all good inventions, I guess, the process of getting it dialed in is not small, you know, years of maybe trial and error development and trying new things. So there are a lot of, even after you've released it, when you're trying to get to maybe the Powerband, how many do you think you go through where you have like one that doesn't work, or you go, nah, this isn't good, we can't go down this road?
Yeah.
Like how many, you don't want to call them failures, but how many learnings do you reckon you had in terms of a product?
Oh, look, you call them failures, there's lots of them. I think, you know, it was very difficult with this too, and we've seen this even with people who've come and tried to copy it since. But getting the properties where you've got that nice high resistance early, so you can actually have a chance of having a genuine mechanical force into the system if you apply it right, is really important. And the fabric companies, generally, probably giving away a few secrets here, but they're good at making fabrics for clothing and other things, but the physical properties in terms of the resistance and the recoil and those sorts of things are generally not a big concern. It's more about what the weave looks like and how it doesn't fray, and it, you know, the dye, you know, it doesn't run and all these sorts of things, rather than the mechanical properties as such in the way that we need it. So there were lots. So we changed factories. This will give you an indication. We changed factories at one point fairly early on because we wanted to make some changes to it. We wanted to make some changes. The posture pals as well, there'd been a few errors where they were cutting through the backing paper into the fabric itself and a few other things. And we just couldn't get the improvements that we wanted, so we changed factories. So we had this big mass production. So we've gone through about four sampling phases, already giving them the original product and saying, this is just these changes that we need to make. We'd gone through four. We'd finally approved the sample. It's fantastic. We'd gone in and we had this mass production run. And then when we got it, it was completely wrong. It was basically back to the third sample instead of the fourth sample. And we priced everything based out of this new one. We then had to go back to our original guys and get another batch from them to at least see us through until we got this right again. And by then the resources were going down here, we were lucky it just sort of turned around at the right time, really. So, but yeah, look, there's lots, as I say, even in the power band, I approved it originally. We were happy with it in 2018. We then went to get them to do the same thing again, and same thing happened. It was completely different again. Wow. And it took basically from 2018 to 2024 through different fabric. You know, they sort of weren't quite sure what they'd done that had made the difference. And ultimately, we went through a bunch of different fabric factories with our tape factory who does all the converting and so on with us. And they've been fantastic. But we went basically through and then ended up back at the original one. And then they realized something relatively simple that they'd forgotten that they'd done. And then now we're back to where we were.
Wow.
And that was like 6 years. I'm like, surely, you know, and I was safe in the time, but just, you know, look at that one again. What did you do there? What was the process? You know, that's frustration. Massive frustration.
6 years. So, and I can't even imagine how much money as well, like to go through.
Yeah.
That. And they're like, we just missed this one step the first time around.
One step. And then,
wow.
And I'm, as I said, well, you know, if you're going to try and do something mechanically and whatever else, you have to have the properties right. So there's no point bringing it out if it's not right. And so I'm quite, you know, pedantic in that way. But it's like, well, what's the point of you know, otherwise it's just, you know, it's just decoration, and that's not what we're about. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
When you were starting it back in after the Posture Pals era, when you were going through that, what was the competition like? Was there a lot of sport tapes in terms of, like, I guess your more elastic styles? Was it something that was a hole in the market, or did you see that the competitors weren't giving the right tools?
Yeah, look, it's funny. Like, we never set out to start a tape company. We were just looking for our solutions, like I said, for our own patients. And it was just sort of evolved, you know, in that way. And we showed, once we got that fabric from the Posture Pals, and I said to Ilva, I said, this is what what we've been trying to do with this other stuff. And as a bit of background, Ilva, my wife, she's a physio also from Sweden, but worked a lot with neurological and pediatric stuff. So we're sort of looking at it from, I was very much load and movement, how that related to load, and where she was sort of movement and function, if you like, you know, gait in kids, or getting thumbs out of, you know, palms and getting functional grasps, or you know, overcoming weakness where it was a neurological injury or a nerve injury or something like that. And so anyway, then we gave it to a few colleagues at a couple of the universities and a few good clinics in Australia, and they're like, yeah, you know, you've got to do something with this. And then about, okay, so then we did that, and we sort of started in Australia, and we started getting some good interest in Australia, started then getting inquiries from overseas just through word of mouth and through our distributor in Australia, who was parent company was in the US and had a UK operation and whatnot. And so then we're like, okay, well, now what do we do? Like, do we really go hard, or do we, you know, just let somebody else take it on? And there wasn't a lot, you know, there wasn't anything that did this. Anything that we've created is because we wanted it. You know, there wasn't, if I had been able to go and buy it, I would have just gone and bought it. You know, that was sort of probably where I was at. Even with our scissors and things, you know, we've just done, tweaked them to have the ones that we wanted, you know. But I remember actually back when I worked with James and I saw Kinesio tape. This would have been fairly early on in their journey as well. And I remember getting the video, was it the old VHS video of Kenzo teaching that. And I'd sort of seen it. I'd seen these different colours, and I'd sort of thought it was like TheraBand, you know, different colours, different resistances. I was always thinking, you know, in the load and mechanics sort of idea. And then when I got it, I was like, hang on a second, they're all, they're all the same. And then watching the video, and it's like, this is very, you know, it's a big departure from my regular way of thinking. You know, I'm already trying to change load. I'm looking at the way people are moving. I'm looking at their training program, looking at the environment. I'm taking them off the hill. I'm putting them on the flat. I'm, you know, whatever. I'm already doing all of these things around load. And then here was this, you know, very different sort of idea of, you know, are we lifting skin and are we creating space and can we facilitate or inhibit by going one direction or other? Things that just sort of didn't really resonate, I guess, so much with me as to where I was coming from. And the properties of the tape just didn't do what we needed. So, yeah, that's how, you know, we even tried actually when we went from foam to tape or foam to fabric, if you like, with the posture powers, we got a bunch of different kinesiology type, you know, those sort of looking fabrics in, and yeah, just they were either too restrictive, they didn't have much assistance, they would tear if you pull on them up very much and that sort of thing. So yeah, so it wasn't, you know, in a sense we stumbled, I wouldn't say we stumbled on it, but we sort of did in a way. We weren't sort of trying to identify a niche in the taping market or in the physio products market or anything else. We were just trying to find solutions, and it just sort of, you know, worked for us, and therefore it worked for others, and then it just sort of went from there. And that's, yeah, we've never sort of had a big probably, you know, to our own detriment, but never had a big sort of marketing budget or pushed up in that way. It's mainly been just, you know, running, you know, probably what we've evolved into more as an education company in a lot of ways, and just teaching education. And that's how it's sort of grown, I guess, word of mouth, people talking about their outcomes and so on. So.
Yeah, amazing. When it started getting that interest of going, like you've got interest from overseas, and it starts going from just an Australia thing to expansion, how'd that affect, I guess, your normal day-to-day life? Is it something that you had to take some steps away from clinical? Because I'm assuming you're working clinical mostly through all of this phase to with the product, but also just as a job. So was there a point where you had to kind of go, oh, I've got to dive in on this a bit more and put more of a sacrifice from your personal hours?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, we sort of sat down and you know, we said, well, and I guess this is, you know, is an individual sort of thing, but we sort of said, well, okay, if we go and do this, you know, really put everything into it. And when I mean everything, we sold our house, we put everything that we'd made, you know, on our house into the business. We moved to Sweden as we got interest in Europe and stayed there for sort of best part of a year when the kids were young. You know, this is early on, probably 2000, and I think we were there in 2011. And we sort of said, well, look, on a day-to-day basis, if it all goes belly up and we lose everything that we put into it, day-to-day, what are we doing? We're both back working clinically, which is where we are now. Yes, we'll have lost the money that we made on our house and we paid off on our house and so on, and we'll have to start again in that regard if we lose everything. But from a day-to-day lifestyle thing, we're just back where we are now, whereas this potentially gives us, you know, the opportunity to do a lot or to, I guess, be more flexible in our lifestyle. You know, as I say, we've got family in Sweden, family in Australia. We were living on Norfolk Island at the time, you know, so the way that we structured the business was that we could more or less do it from anywhere to, you know, to allow us to spend some time over with family in Sweden if we needed to, you know, and so on. So, yeah, so in that regard, it was sort of a conscious decision, but it changed everything. I mean, you know, it's probably one of those things, you know, if people are setting out in business, I guess, is to really know the outcome that you want. Like, where do you want it to take you, and what are you prepared to give up or sacrifice to get there? Because it's, you know, I mean, I still work. I haven't had a day off in that 15 years or more. I work literally 365 days a year. There's not a day that I won't actually be at least answering some emails and you know, doing something. Christmas Day doesn't change. You know, orders might need to get shipped out from the factory. They don't care about Christmas Day, whatever it is.
I think the curveballs are, you know, that one, the six-year one's a wild one. But sure, yeah, that manufacturing is a whole other ball game, you know, compared to a face-to-face service industry and the trial and errors and the stipulations with, I guess, what's happening in society is a huge factor. But having a factory, stitch you up for that amount of time when, you know, resources are thin and you're just pumping everything into it.
That's right.
It obviously takes a lot of tenacity and perseverance, mental toughness, all those things that, you know, I think even the way that physio was, and you're doing a lot of touring and sport, and like when you're in sport, it's the same as now where money's not a thing, you know, you're doing it for the love of it. So, you know, there's obviously a part of you that's gone, I enjoy doing this, but you've also created something that's helped thousands of people. So, you know,
and that's the thing and you hit the nail on the head. That's probably what does keep you going, is that we feel like we're adding value. We're not selling tobacco, you know, like we feel like we're adding value to people's lives. We're making clinicians' lives easier because it gives them a really helpful tool that they can use. It gets great effect, you know, outcomes for patients and athletes and so on. So if I didn't believe in it, there's no way that you could have done it. And we constantly get that feedback from people, which keeps you going, you know. In your darkest times, you'll get an email from somebody that gets you going again. So, but it is, manufacturing is a whole different, you know, ball game. And you know, as I said, I had 2 degrees in physio. We never had one business subject or anything like that. And then it just expands out, you know. Then you've got lots of, you know, compliance issues, for example, and you know, different countries, you know, different things you need to do with the regulatory authorities and all of those sorts of things, and there's just so much that you don't even contemplate going into it.
You put them all on the table and it's an easy no-brainer. They got to come in. Yeah. They got to come in series, and you can't see them coming. You don't. You know, they come when they come, but if you'd put all that on the table for like almost 20 years of development to get to this point, it's an absolute journey. But that's it, right? It's a journey rather than, you know, the end goal in sight.
And I think probably also helped, you know, is that, you know, we burn all our bridges. We literally did sell the house, put everything into it, and it was sort of all or nothing. There's no way back, in a sense. It was sort of the only way
forward, was
the only way past it is through it, you know, pretty much, you know. And so I think, in saying that, I think too, at times, you know, people probably got to know when to cut your losses and get out. But it was always going, you know, it was always improving, going well and building. It was just that it was frustrations along the way, you know. So.
Absolutely. Well, Ryan, that was an absolutely awesome journey through that story. I've always, you know, hearing, like, when you're a physio or like a clinician, you use products as a new grad. You're like, oh, you'd use this for this, use that for that. And so, you know, it's all, dynamic tape's always been, like, I've used it since I've started. I'm 6 year physio, but I was chatting to some other physios. I'm like, I'm interviewing the inventor of dynamic tape, and everyone's really excited about that, you know, like it's something that's it sounds like something that may not be there, but it's just, it's really interesting concept of having you know, products aligned with allied health, and how I guess, you know, you've turned a problem into a solution for many, many, many people. So I'd like to finish off with a couple of questions. We just do some quick fire ones at the end. Which dynamic tape's your favorite?
For me, the Power Band, the new one. Although I must say, I'm a bit partial to the new Red Bull XL, so one we've just done with Red Bull as well. So that's just got a cool factor to it as well. So it's very similar in properties to the Eco, the black one, with a high resistance. But it's we made it specifically for their XL event, which is the world's toughest adventure race, as they mark it. It's crazy race.
That's awesome. Really cool.
And that was nice. They came to us, which was even nicer, you know. So that's one of those things that you're like, again, there's those little things that keep you going when you get that sort of thing happening. You know.
Very cool. And something that wouldn't happen unless you're, you know, there would be a thousand tape suppliers. They obviously want something that fits the brand and also fits what they're trying to do. So that's right. Congratulations on that. Exactly. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Number two, if you could be professional at any sport, what would it be?
Oh, gee. Different ones for different reasons. Probably I'd have to say surfing. I've always surfed. I love it. Still surf lots. what a lifestyle.
Big wave surfing or more of your competition?
Yeah, that's probably where I'd fall over. It's the big stuff. Watching Chopu recently and something. But yeah, that's probably the downside. I'd like to be one of these free surfers that just gets paid to go and free surf really nice waves all the time. That'd be the pick.
I'm assuming as soon as you sell Dynamic.
Otherwise, I'd say cricket.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, I loved working with the cricket. Loved playing cricket. But yeah.
Batter, bowler, which position?
I actually grew up was a wicketkeeper batsman. Yeah, nice. Wicketkeeper opening batsman when I grew up. Yeah. Nice.
Last one, if an allied health professional wanted to create a product, what advice would you give them?
Where do you start, really? I think probably the idea is just the beginning, as we've sort of discussed. It's a long road from idea to, you know, successful product, and there's a lot of great products that aren't necessarily viable in the market. So I think you need to really do your due diligence on that and the market research to see if you've got a really good market. Is it worth the effort, the money, the sacrifice that's going to be involved to take it from idea to, you know, to fruition?
So do your research.
Yeah. Do your research and really know. Like, and also, as I say, think about what does that look like in the end? Like, if you love being a clinician, and I love being a clinician, don't get me wrong, I actually really loved it, and I love traveling around with the sport and doing all that at the highest level. And I've been lucky throughout this that I've stayed involved, and I've done a few Commonwealth Games. You know, the girls here in Vanuatu have won 2 bronze medals. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be with them with the beach volleyball and so on throughout that journey. So I've stayed in it, and obviously with the tape, we're always taping people and whatever. But, you know, if you want to be in a clinic and love your clinic, you know, just realize that doing a product and a manufacturing type of business, it's a whole different, you know, a different occupation to what it is, you know, being a clinician. So just realize, well, where do you want that to end? Because you may not like that, you know, where that's going to place you. That may not be what your ideal sort of occupation or profession is. So just be aware of that, I think. And secondly, I think, and you touched on it with the way that we did it, is if you can, is build it on the side while you still got your, you know, your income coming in from your clinical side. And also if it's a product that's related to physiotherapy or healthcare, then you can use it and test it out and get good, you know, feedback from patients, from other clinicians, et cetera, if you're still in that environment, which I think is really critical is in those early stages as well to answer that first question. Is it worth, you know, is there a market for it? Is it worth doing?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Great advice. Well, thanks, Ryan. That was, like I said, that was awesome. Appreciate you taking the time out of your day. And
thank you.
I can't wait to actually, I haven't seen the Red Bull tape, so I'm going to go look it up straight away as soon as
it's done. I think it's landing. I don't know if it's landed in Australia yet, but it should be there very soon.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, mate.
Excellent.
Cheers.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for the invitation again.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
Do you run a physio clinic? If you do, then you'll know the pain of administrative overheads. Clinic One is a brand new clinic management software that will turn overhead burdens into profits. The AI software is designed by a physio, so they know what key features are needed to help clinics not just survive, but to thrive. Use the interactive calculator at clinicone.ai to see how many thousands your clinic will save you per month. Sign up early for exclusive launch deals that will help kickstart your clinic expansion goals. Head over to clinicone.ai.